When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from Fantasy Football Scout. It's Meet the Manager time. This is our regular catch-up with the best advice from some of the community's top FPL managers of all time. Yes, we will focus on those with incredible rank history, but we're also adding to that those with an interesting story to tell and how FPL is impacting on their lives, and also, you know, a little bit about their perspective of the game, especially those that have been playing for a long time. We'll also be focusing on managers who offer a unique insight and research into the game. Today, I'm joined by Shiva Atri. Have I pronounced your name correctly, Shiva?
That's perfect.
Excellent. Good stuff. Good start. You have shown a remarkable consistency over your 14-year FPL career, and in particular the last 5 years, and I'm very keen on that because the game has got rather big over that time as well, so you're clearly doing something right. You've also got experience of seeing how the game has grown in India, as well as in your new home in the US in recent years. So I think we've got a bit to chat about there. So we'll find out a bit about your career history, tips for success, and a little snapshot of your game week 2 side. And to timestamp this, we're in the 21-22 season. So Shiva, I've pronounced your name correctly. It's a good start. I'm going to pronounce all the footballers' names wrong, but we'll sketch over that. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thank you. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad that you've joined us. Because as I said, you've got this unique perspective, I suppose, from looking at the growth of the game, but from different territories as well. And we have seen particular, you know, we've got some quite well-known managers from India now. And I guess when you started in FPL, there really wasn't that. So when... Take me a bit about, I mean, I'll put your career history up in a minute, but, you know, when did you start playing FPL and why? Were you at school or work, or, you know, what's your start?
So it was from my college days. So I think in 2006, that was my first season. And that's the time when I found the game. Obviously, I'd been watching Premier League even before that, but I just found this game, and I have always been a fantasy games freak, if you call that. And I have been playing like fantasy cricket for quite a long time as well. So when I found this game, I really liked the idea of it. And the thing is, in India back then, nobody watched that much of a football, and so fantasy game was, you know, so in other words, it was hard to explain people, okay, what kind of game you are playing. So they, okay, so you are playing a game based on a game where players do what they have to do, and then what you do, you just pick them. And so it was like hard for them to understand. But yeah, I mean, I got into it pretty quickly in my first season itself. And initially for a few years, it was more of a, you know, competing with leagues with my friends, college mates, and, you know, a little bit about banter and stuff. But then obviously, you know, now it has gone a little bit serious, like season history and all.
Yeah.
So coming back to the question, that time in India, I don't think there were any even fantasy football websites or forums. No. And nowadays, like, it has grown to an extent that we have quite a few content creators and good content creators from India. And it has really gone up a notch, and not just the quantity, also the quality. So I don't know whether you know, but all about FPL, Surya is a good friend of mine. So he was invited to a John Dyke show just I think this week, and it is like, you can consider that as a Asian version of Match of the Day.
Yeah,
and that they are actually taking a note of content creators from India nowadays. And when I look back in the days when I started playing, it was like maybe it was just growing at that time. And then recently, when people started following more Premier League, I think Premier League in India also, they deserve credit for that. Maybe they got more active into the social media and stuff like that. So people got more into the Premier League and more into the game. And then obviously, the content creators are helping it grow. So it really feels nice. But so I remember in my first few seasons playing when I was in India, in a week where I had a wild card to play. So some of my friends who didn't know about fantasy football that time, they were like, let's go for a movie on a Friday night. And I was like, can we go tomorrow? And they said, well, what's the problem today? I have to set up a team for my wild card. And they were like, I mean, I ended up not telling them what that game is about, and I ended up going to the movie. It was easier that way, but it was kind of like, it was difficult to explain, okay, this game that you're playing, it can be played in so serious way that we have been playing. But now everybody does that. So now when I go back to India for a vacation, so I still have a group of friends, and now we talk in terms of fantasy football. Like, okay, so what about this player? What about that player? And like a few years back, it was nothing. But it's really great to see.
And what about in America as well? So how long have you been living in America? And have you seen a sort of similar explosion of interest in the game? You know, suddenly people understand what you're talking about your wild card, or maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I moved here to the Texas in 2012. And obviously, again, back then, fantasy football was not that much of a thing. And again, it comes back to the content creators, like Always Cheating, FML, FPL. Those are like some of the great content creators who definitely have helped grow this game into the US. But it was a similar thing when I came to the US. So I think plenty of people in here used to play a fantasy football, but that football is American football. So in this language, they were not that much playing fantasy soccer. But not nowadays. That has also grown. So when I came here, I'm obviously a Man United fan, as you might be seeing. So we had a cafe here in Dallas, like 50 miles from here. And back in 2012, there were like 5 to 6 people. We used to go out to that cafe every morning, watch the games. And now, like every game, be it in the morning or afternoon, it's full. Almost 150 to 200 people are on there. We have a fantasy league of all the people who go to that cafe. So really, in last few years, not only the viewers of a Premier League has grown in the US, what I have seen, and definitely that comes with the fantasy football content. Because whenever you go to watch a match, even if few people are playing, you end up discussing a lot about fantasy football. And then, everybody's into that.
So was that, I mean, things like, I guess, with Fantasy Football Scout, for example, the sort of news and stuff, is that over the years you've gradually been using that type of site and looking at the stats and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, quite a lot. I'm not that kind of much of a stat kind of a guy. Okay. More of look at the stats, but stats are not my first go to the point. And moreover, when I started playing this, there were no stats, right? I mean, there was not much content. No. So I usually tend to pick my players based on the eye test first. Okay. But now in the recent years, what I have been doing, like after my eye test, if I say shortlist a couple of players, then I definitely take a look at all stats of them. And as long as, there are not too many stats which are making me going away from them, I still go with them. But definitely stats are something that... Just going back on that US and India factor that you were talking about, one thing I wanted to mention. So for me, one of the differences what I've seen is, it's not in terms of actually the game is played, but in India, because of the time zones, usually the Premier League games are Saturday, Sunday, say about mid-afternoon to go till midnight. So that's usually a time where, you know, you have to take your wife to the dinner, you have to meet relatives,
Okay.
you have to be with your family,
Yeah.
you know, friends. It was hard, you know, to justify, okay, that was the only time which you could give to family. And okay, when you play fantasy football, obviously it comes with watching a lot of games. And I know that there are some people who manage to, you know, not watch games or just catch up on highlights and play FPL, but I cannot do that,
No,
honestly.
no.
But here in the US, that is something that I liked, and it is really helping following this hobby of mine, if you call it
Okay.
that, in a better way, because the games here start around 6 o'clock in the morning and usually finish up in about little bit after afternoon, about afternoon. And by that time, maybe, you know, you have like more than half a day to go. So you can have the morning to yourself.
So you can
And
watch
then,
before work, you can just watch a football match and then.
usually it's in the weekend. So I don't work on weekends, so that's not a problem for me. But yeah, I mean, that's a good thing to have. You still have most of the afternoon and evening to, you know, spend with your family and friends. So you people can't say, okay, you're playing this game, you know, and not doing anything else, because everything happens in the first half of the third.
Well, let's have a look at your career history, because there's a few things I wanted to pull out with that. I mean, one is that you've been playing a long time, so since 2007. You started, you know, with two ranks around the 60,000 mark. So you started obviously clearly liking the game and adapting to it well, first and second season. I mean, across the years, it's only really been two bad seasons. One outside the top 200,000, and one, you know, edging towards the top 400,000. But the rest of them are really quite high up. And in particular, in recent years, and I found that particularly intriguing. Because we live in a world with more content, more opportunity to watch games, more opinions, more social media. And a lot of people have struggled with that, because it's a case of sort of filtering that out. So looking at your career history, 2014, 15, you know, top 2000s, top 3000, 2016, 17. You've had five top 25K finishes in the last 5 years, and that includes the top 10,000 in 2018, and just outside of there, really, in last year and the year before that as well. So, I just want to ask you a bit about, you know, the growth in content, the growth in social media and opinions, where some people in recent years have struggled with that, but you seem to have taken that, you know, done well at that, or you just ignore it. I don't know. Yeah, how do you cope with it all?
So you said about last 5 years. So I think I got into the FPL community on Twitter only 2 years back. So obviously I was on Fantasy Football Scout members area a lot, and I've been on some other forums as well. But yeah, this FPL Twitter, which is, you know, that's something that really, you know, overwhelms you with a lot of data information. And but I mean, it's not always the noise, right? I mean, because just this week, what we have seen, game week one, Twitter template, if you call it, that rocked, right? So it's not always the noise. But one of the things that I have always done is, whatever I want to do for the next game week, usually I have a couple of ideas in my mind by end of Sunday, the previous game week. And I usually do that based on watching all the games and maybe looking at some stats and looking the state of my team. So when I make that decision, I just, hold that decision for a few days till about Friday, when actually I'm implementing it. And then when I'm about to implement it, but in the meantime, I've had so much content through the Twitter or any other forums throughout the week. I'm seeing if my mind has changed on that player, or if my mind has, you know, any other player in my mind has come up. So I compare those two thoughts and see, okay, let's say on a Friday, I wanted to go for a completely different player from what I had thought on Sunday. I think that what is the reason that change of thought has happened for. So if there is a valid reason for that, so maybe there is some injury news, there is maybe some quote for managers that makes maybe particular player better. So it can be a thing where you are rightly changing your mind and making a different transfer, but I definitely take into consideration, because I have observed so many times, like I was set on some player on Sunday and something happened, and in Friday I ended up bringing in some other player, and on Sunday I was like, I was sure on bringing this player a week back. Why didn't I go ahead with that? And maybe that is the reason, but at least for last season, couple of seasons, I've been doing this. Whatever I want to go with, I actually write it down.
Yeah, that's
so good. Okay.
It's, I mean, our last Meet the Manager video featured Ross Dowsett, who's written a book, The Mind Game, about the psychology behind what you've just been describing. And I think, if I understand his book correctly, you're talking about an anchor bias, you're anchoring an opinion, and it's good to have that at the beginning of the week, but then you've got that flexibility within that. So the problem with FPL managers would be to have that anchor bias and then just say, well, that's it, no matter what happens. But you are aware of that, write it down, remember it, and then you look at the team developments and all the, you know, the usual things that would influence a decision. And see if anyone's opinions change your mind, and then go with that. So that would be a lesson to those listening and watching, really, is the importance of actually having an anchor bias, perhaps. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways, right? I mean, sometimes, let's say if I plan on bringing any other, say, particular player, and then I see some content throughout the week which tells me why it is not right to bring that player, right? So that can also come into picture. So maybe you are just thinking in one straightforward way, and maybe you need to consider some other factors as well. So yeah, definitely that. Basically, we have to keep questioning our thoughts as well.
Okay.
It's not just like, okay, I watched this game, this player looked really good, let's get him in.
Okay.
It's a lot more than that.
Okay, well, let's have a look at some of your strategies as well, and consider them. So I've written down some bullet points here, so we'll just find out a little bit about where you are, and hopefully I give some advice to those listening and watching. So I've written down hits. Do you tend to take many hits? How many hits do you tend to take a season?
Honestly, I have not counted, but let me tell you this. I really don't think I know that these are called as hits, but Fantasy Premier League doesn't call it as hits. When you say hits, it necessarily means a bad thing, right? Like you are taking a point hit. But it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying, okay, you should take hits left and right, but if it's worth it, you should definitely go for it. So I think it can be taken as if hits were given to us as chips, just that you could use it for all 38 game weeks, and those are optional.
Okay.
I bet people would look at hits, you know, in a lot more positive way. So, I mean, I'm all up for hits, as long as what you are doing, you have done thorough research on it, and you know what you're doing. So, for example, why people usually tend to think hits are bad is because hits usually involve two transfers, right? So one player is someone actually in your team who has got injured, or, you know, is suspended, and you want to get rid of him, and or you want to get some player which you have your eyes on. While doing it, because the budget doesn't fall into place, you end up taking some other player just to, in your words, cash cow, using it as a cash cow. So what happens is, we usually tend to think, okay, this player costs 11 million. If I could use 2 million out of it, I could get this player and it's worth 4 points. But you don't think enough that the player you are taking out, you are not taking it out because he's a bad choice. You are taking out because you want to use the cash from him and give it to somebody else.
So that's the problem with the hit. It's not the points you're taking. It's the fact that that decision involves perhaps a player that's you could keep, and it could end up being a good player to keep. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, if there are two players, let's say there are two players who are both injured, and you don't have a good playing 11, and if you take hits, more often than not, you are going to be, you know, on the positive side of points gained at the end of the game week. So it's just a matter of if your team needs such kind of decisions, and you think those decisions are worth more than 4 points over the period of time. Obviously, I don't endorse taking hit just for 1 week, you know, unless it's a double game week or something, but you at least need to have a player who you're taking for hit. He has to look good for next couple of weeks at least.
Okay, next in my list is captaincy. Are you basically a Salah Fernandes kind of guy? Or in your case, Fernandes, because of Manchester United. But do you start usually go for the Aguero and Mahrez and Son, or how, explain your captaincy?
So I mean, in captaincy, I've always been a person who likes to go for a choice who has, like, you know, more than one way to score points, you know, set pieces, on penalties. So that is definitely something I like, and most of the time that's what I go with. But having said that, when I have looked back to some of my past seasons or past game weeks, I've realized, like, I tend to miss out the captain hauls on players like Mane or DCL, or, you know, the players who are Sterling, who are, you know, high upside, but they have only one way of getting points. So it doesn't necessarily is a bad thing to look at multiple ways of getting points, but there are a lot more other factors as well. So but usually whenever I've gone with them, like, I really like my player to be on the penalties if I'm going with captain, because there can be a scenario like just Aston Villa, right? they were awful for 90 plus 6 minutes or so, and Danny Ings out of nothing just scored a penalty plus a bonus point, and there you go, you're 7-pointer. So so but also I would like to mention a point here that it is frowned upon in the FPL community that you should not captain a defender, and I get that, like, it only takes a one mistake you know, to concede a goal, but I don't necessarily think that. And this season, if I get an opportunity where I'm getting I'm thinking that, okay, maybe Trent or Shaw have a easier fixture and their defense is looking good, I won't mind taking a little punt on captaincy on a defender. Because usually if you see, a lot of teams now play with attacking defenders, like Trent or Robertson, when he's fit, they always run into the box.
Well, I guess the old days, Leighton Baines would have been.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was one of my favorite players. I still remember when he was priced like 7.5 million. Can you believe it? Just similar to Trent. And I still had him in my team because he was on penalties, he was on free kicks, and Everton were doing pretty okay at that time. And yeah, so, I mean, defenders, obviously, it's not like left and right. If you have a good captain choice, you don't go with the defenders. But that is something definitely, I think it is frowned upon a little bit more. And maybe defenders have a little bit more in it for captains.
When I look at your recent season finishes, for my next question, it says attitude to risk. That says, my assumption is that you're not a big risk taker. You play the safe game because there's remarkable consistency there in the high finishes. But am I right there? What is your attitude to risk?
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, as you said, more predominantly, I'm a cautious manager. And I like to take risk and find opportunities, but those have to be, you know, educated guesses, not the wild guesses, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know whether if you follow cricket or watch it, but when you get a bouncer or yorker, you're not supposed to try and hit that out of the park, right? I mean, you will more often than not get out. You have to defend those, stay not out, and so that when you get the easy delivery, you can hit it out of the park. So similarly, if you just try to you know, take a risk in some game weeks, so for example, in first game week, Salah and Fernandes were, you know, quite obvious captains because they had good fixtures, you know, and form, and their team.
So to use the cricket analogy, they're the easy ball.
So yeah, I mean, easy ball in the sense there is not much to think about. So those were not the weeks to take risk. Yeah. So if we will come to that, if you bring up my game week two team. So let's say for a Man City captaincy, Man City could have easily won at Spurs, and maybe any of their midfielders might have done well. But that was not a game week to take a risk and captain any Man City players, because Salah and Fernandes were options which made a lot of sense. Mm. So you should avoid taking risk in such scenarios where, a lot of... you say obvious choices or a lot of sensible choices are around, but there will definitely be some weeks where there is a chance for taking a risk and do well, and you should definitely go for that. Or in other words, like, you can, instead of a risk, you can call it as opportunistic. Let's say you see some player, okay, that particular player is changing a position, he's playing out of position, and manager maybe in presser said something good about that player that makes you think that he's going to do well. So definitely you can take the risk, and you should take the risk, because I think that's the best part of playing FPL. There is no better feeling than taking slight risk on a player which nobody else is taking, and that player doing well. Yeah. There is no better feeling in FPL.
Next question. I put it in the notes so you can see it coming. So 2013 and 2009 were your only bad seasons. And I say that, still within the top half million. So it depends on your attitude to bad. But for your standards, they were poor seasons. So what happened in those seasons? Was that down to luck or particular things going on? Or did you change your strategy? Did you become more risky?
So, I mean, honestly, it's almost like a decade back, right? So I don't remember exact each game week, but I can definitely tell you this. One thing that way back then, overall rank history was not a thing. So once you are done with your mini league, so we used to play last man standing league that time, and usually used to finish maybe at half a season or just a little bit more on that, because we used to eliminate the teams. And so then there is nothing left to play for the last part of the season. So you just take wild punts, And that time, I think Ben Crelin only came around 2015 or 2016. Before that, he was not there. So all the second part of the season where all the double game week and stuff, if you are not up for it, if you don't have your attention in that, then you are likely to have a bad ending. But to answer your question, So even for 14 seasons, I have never had a good start. And for one of those seasons, definitely I remember that because I did not have a good start, at the start of the season itself, I tried to make up that ground and ended up falling even behind. And that was the thing that I learned from, I think, my last bad finish, I think 235K or something. That's what I learned. Like, even if after five game weeks, if you are like 3, 4, 5 million, that is not essentially the time to take even more risk. Even if you feel, okay, maybe if I don't take risk now, my end of the game target would reduce to maybe top 10K or top 50K. But if you take more risk in that time, you will be in a situation that there is nothing to recover to go back to, top 100K or top 50K. So
I must admit, when I've my ranking's been really bad during the season, the taking more risks has never really worked out. And the just playing it safe, in fact, doing nothing, just leaving it. especially when there's a good run with a captain, you can go for with a few weeks, and just leaving it really does help. So that is quite good advice, I think. Not making a bad situation worse.
Obviously it goes both ways. So maybe some of the aggressive managers would think, okay, that is the time when you take a couple of risks, and if they hit, you are right back into the top million, and you can aim higher. But I mean, it really depends on your personality, because now the game has grown so much. Like, if you had a really bad rank, it's really hard to be on the Twitter or any other forums. You just need to switch off. So it depends how what kind of a person you are.
Well, let's have a look at your game week two side to find out a bit more about some of those strategies in action. Now, the team that you sent me, I haven't put the captaincy flag on, because... I wonder if, because it was a few days ago you sent to me, you might have changed your mind. But I'll tell people who you put the captaincy on, because they might be surprised. So we've got your team up on screen. And just for the quickly for those listening on the podcast version, you've got a 3-5-2 with Sanchez, Alexander-Arnold, Shaw, Tsimikas, who I've given the wrong shirt colour to, so apologies there to Tsimikas. He definitely does play for Liverpool. Salah, Fernandes, Mahrez, Rafinha, Barnes, and Tony and Antonio, the double Tonys up top. And you had the captaincy on Mahrez. So I'll start with that. Are you still minded to captain Mahrez, or has Salah and Fernandes wooed you?
Yeah, so that was my best team, if you call it that. I think always cheating Brandon's phase.
Yes.
It was my best team, and it was essentially set when the game updated on Friday. And the reason behind that was I thought like Man City would look good against Spurs and maybe get a narrow win. And then if Mahrez, I'm confident on that. Okay, Mahrez has played well and he'll definitely start against Norwich. He might be a great shout just because like Norwich would consider many goal probably. But now definitely that is something that I'm not going to go with, because one, nobody knows whether he'll start now. He was hauled off, I think, 70 minutes or so. And he missed really a great chance. And we have seen Pep in the past. Sterling missed a couple of chances. Somebody missed a couple of good chances. And where you're there going back to the bench. So I'm definitely not captaining him. It will be definitely one of the Salah and Fernandes. But that was my reasoning behind. So whenever I set my bus team for the next week, I just look at the things what are on my mind that right now, and I just select on the captaincy. That is also one of the thing when I change my captaincy or confirm my captaincy on Friday or Saturday before deadline, I take a look at, okay, what was the captain I had put on in my bus team? And I knew the reasons behind that, and also can check, compare, okay, whether I'm changing it for the right reason. So this week, yes, when I look that back, definitely I'm not going to stick with Mahrez.
And to pin that down even further, who would you be minded to captain? Salah at home to Burnley, where a team where he hasn't traditionally done well, but it is a home game. It is Salah. It is against a bottom half team, you would imagine. Or Fernandes, your team, who are playing away to Southampton. And he has done particularly well against Southampton in recent years, but it is away. So where are you minded to captain at the moment? Who are you?
So that was one of the reasons, right? Like United are playing away. I was not sure how good, how sharp we would look. So Fernandes was also not that much. I was sure on game week two, and Salah again against Burnley. I was thinking that Burnley would go back to their, you know, low black block team defending all the time, but we didn't see that. So that was one of the reasons why I had put my game week two captaincy on Mahrez. But now looking back, I am right now 60% on Salah for the captaincy, and that is because we could clearly see the effect of home crowd, right? And game week one, obviously some of it didn't work out for Norwich, but definitely Brentford, Watford, we definitely saw Spurs. I mean, the crowd was fantastic, and definitely I could see Southampton first game. They will be up for it, and it may not be as high scoring as you know, the Leeds game. And Salah is at home, and Anfield crowd will be back after, you know, almost a year to the full strength. And I definitely think that Salah will do well. And moreover, Burnley, I didn't see much of evidence against Brighton that Burnley are back to their, you know, defense deep and defense first team. And again, like your team had pretty good second half, and I think a lot of chances. So I think Liverpool are going to score at least a couple of goals against Burnley.
For those that don't know, my team's Brighton, by the way. Who rarely delivered on their expected goal stats by actually scoring.
do you think that this season it's like all coming in at around full circle? Like last season, Brighton just, you know, failed to score at every opportunity, this time, okay.
I mean, I do look at a lot of stats, and one of the things I noticed that if a team or a player consistently underperforms their expected stats, and it goes on for a long time, and it just keeps doing, and they don't dip at all, then at some point it's going to break. And so the real test is going to be them not losing 1-0 to Crystal Palace, with one shot from Crystal Palace and 20 from Brighton. That's going to be the test. But looking back at your team here, you've got a 3-5-2. Is 3-5-2 your normal sort of strategy formation?
So I like 3-5-2 formation, especially because in the game, a lot of teams have midfielders who actually play forwards for their team, like Son, Salah, Mane. They are like essentially the forwards for their team. So even if you're playing five at the midfield, at least two or three of them are forwards. So, and plus you get one extra point for them. So five in the midfield has been my preferred formation. I mean, honestly, till this season, I'm still on it. But this season, I may not stick with it for long. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for that is we don't have a 4.5 million starting forward this season yet. I mean, maybe there will be someone who will be emerging after the transfer market is done. But right now, there is not. And I think with this positive COVID test out of nowhere, these kind of things coming, you know, a little bit of surprise, I think we should keep two players on the bench who are, you know, who at least play 90 minutes or start the game.
Well, you've got on your bench, you've got Sanchez's deputy. So say Sanchez gets COVID or has to isolate, Steer will come in. You've got Luke Ayling, who actually scored in game week one, delivering on his expected goal stats from last season, actually scoring. He's a good example of that. He's the Brighton in the form of a tall man with long hair.
So 38 game weeks, no single goal, no assist. People like had him all season and waiting for that. And this first season, bang. Yeah. I mean, same thing, a lot of things. Brighton, Elling, then last season, if you see a lot of unorthodox picks working out, like Socek, Lingard. So, I mean, those are not usually very popular, you know, FPL picks, or even the likes of Stone and Gundogan. And this season, it looks back to normal, like Fernandes, Salah, okay, double digit go off. So it little bit coming back to the point you asked me about last five seasons, we have seen different seasons in last five seasons. And maybe like that is one of the reasons why like most of the, you know, high profile managers did not do well for in at least one of those seasons is because this each season is throwing at us a different game altogether, and we have to adjust to that. And I definitely think in first few weeks we get the essence of how this season is going to work out. So reading season in your first few game weeks is really key.
Do you think because we've got Romelu Lukaku about to start against Arsenal for Chelsea, and Chelsea's fixtures become really good sort of game week 7-ish onwards for a number of weeks. You've also got obviously Salah and Fernandes performing to a high level. Kane could go to Manchester City, but even if he doesn't, Manchester City have De Bruyne, and then meanwhile Spurs have Son. These are all expensive players, and you've gone as cheap as you can probably get on your bench whilst having it effectively playing. You've got Obafemi and you've got Livramento. So Livramento could be a regular starter. Obviously he won't, but nevertheless, I mean, you've gone as cheap as you can. What strategy do you think is best to get all of those players in, or is the best strategy not to get all of those players in and to cherry pick the best one, best expensive players you can?
So when I planned for first game week, team for my first game week, I had thought of saving my free transfer for game week 2 and do the 2 transfer in game week 3, or maybe a mini wild card if, you know, there are a lot of players emerging which I want and there are some problems with my team. So, and I think I'm still good on that, but I'm going to save free transfer this week, and then if Mahrez doesn't look like that he's going to start next game, or he's not playing well, then I'm going to use him to maybe upgrade to Son and maybe make any other transfer with Harvey Barnes or maybe. So one of the thing I'm thinking about is maybe even downgrading Tony to even further down to maybe Dennis of Watford.
Okay.
He looked pretty good. And so that can generate the cash to go maybe Son in the midfield. But as you said, for the forwards, as of now, it looks like if I have to get Lukaku or Kane with this structure, then I have to sacrifice maybe one of Fernandes and Salah, but it doesn't look like that. And I have tried to do that. Anyone who will try to get Kane and Lukaku fitting into their team with Fernandes and Salah, the rest of the team will struggle
A
lot.
I don't even know if it's possible.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe.
Yeah. So I mean, I think this is the season of premium. So I don't really think we should think about players that we are missing out. But if we definitely think for next 4 weeks as a premium player, Lukaku is going to outscore Salah, then definitely you can make that switch. But as long as those two are playing, at least for next couple of weeks, I'm going to just wait and watch what happens with Kane and Lukaku.
Well, I mean, a good solution is the wild card, because that, for some people, a wild card is a sort of sign of failure, as in I haven't got it right, I'm going to correct something. But for some other people, it can be, at a particular time, it can be a show of strength. To say, well, I'm going to target these fixtures, or it's evident I need to get Lukaku in, and I need a restructure to work out how to do that. What's your attitude to wild cards, and I guess chips in general? Do you usually wild card early or late?
So I usually wildcard early, but that is because usually I have to. And when I say I have to, it's not just because my team is in bad shape, but there are so many good players, those emerge up, and it's not worth, taking so many hits. But I never plan for a wildcard. So even this season, I see a lot of people saying that, okay, my wild card is nailed in game week 7. There is a change of fixture swing, or even game week 4, I think a couple of teams are seeing good fixture swing. So I mean I get that, but for me, I've always thought of delaying wild card as much as possible. Although I have not been able to do that much, but I always plan for that. So game week 7 definitely is seeing some fixture swings, but I don't know my game week 6 team right now, right? I mean, maybe 80% of the players I might already have in game week 6, which I would want in game week 7. So then there is no point in hitting a wild card just for a couple of players. So, to answer your question, I plan it to use as late as possible, but eventually there is a game week where you see a lot of opportunities or a lot of problems, and you see, there it is.
You mentioned when we're looking back on your career history, where you didn't know, well, it wasn't the double game weeks, and that sort of level of planning around chips wasn't a thing back then. And we didn't have that array of chips when you or I started. But what do you think, what is your general attitude to that? For example, I personally like to combine some of chips, like say for a bench boost and a wild card, sort of wild card but with a bench boost in mind. I find that for me that tends to work out. Some people have great success using it in a single game week, and some people prefer other options. But what's your general attitude to chips? You always use them around double game weeks, and if so, do you have a particular strategies?
Yeah, so I mean, bench boost always has followed the wild card for me, at least last 3-4 years at least. I don't remember using my chips in a single game again. And obviously that is, it depends on odds, right? Obviously you get two shots at that. And if you know for what particular player is good for 180 minutes, then obviously there is, it makes more sense to captain him or triple captain him in double game week instead of a single game week. And I know people use it in a single game week, and it's quite successful for some of them. But for me, it just, if it fails in a double game week, I wouldn't regret it. But if it fails in a single game week, I would definitely regret it. I always use it in the double game weeks. But having said that, it has come to a point where now everybody is using it in the second half of the season and double. So, I mean, I really would wish, like, if one of those changes I would like FPL to make, like, imagine we have to use one of our chips in the first half of the season.
Yes.
I know.
I've always advocated that. First half season chips complete, and then second half season chips.
Yeah, and not the triple captain, because if they give us a choice of one chip, everybody will use triple captain, because it's not off use anyway. Like, anyway, you're going to get a
game week one on
Mane
Salah
and Sané.
Game week one Salah, that's my triple captain.
And that's the thing, by the way. I mean, I know a person, I know he's a friend of friend. He kept triple captain Salah last season got 20 points. This season, 17 points. And he has no doubt in his mind he'll be triple captaining him next season as well. So
there we go. Just before we go, I noticed a couple of other players I just wanted to mention. Say, for example, Rafinha, Barnes and Tony. Now, all of those players have strong potential over the coming weeks. And in particular, I think in game week two and coming up for game week three. But some people might want to move on early. So what is your general strategy for a player that's, you know, where the ownership is really decreasing and people are shedding them, they've had enough after a week or two? When do you get rid of a player? After a week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks? Do you have a threshold when it's, you know, time to go?
So I mean, it's hard to define those rules, but in this particular case, definitely Rafinha and Barnes were disappointing for me. Tony, I think although he blanked, I think he looked good, and I think he has a couple of good fixtures coming up. So I think I'm going to hold Tony for a couple of more games, because anyway, there are no other options in that price bucket anyway. But for Barnes, I mean, that is one of the things that I am thinking this week. I had decided to save a transfer, and I think I will end up doing that. But there is a case for moving Barnes to maybe somebody like our Twitter darling Wenrama, or maybe even Suchek, or maybe changing Rafinha to somebody else. But when I got them in my game week one side, I always thought of Rafinha would be good for game week two and three. And I mean, last game, Rafinha, he had a great chance at the end. And if he puts that away, I mean, it's all good, right? Even Barnes, he had one good opportunity where Vardy was open, and I almost thought, okay, he had to pass it there, and he just went selfish way and got himself hauled off for Iheanacho. So I'm hoping that keeping faith in these two would help, because Rafinha has got two good fixtures. Everton, although like they look good in second half, I think Leeds will come back strong, as they have done all the time last season. And Barnes has Norwich in game week three, and I'm currently planning to give him a chance till that. So whenever I get a player, I have my game week in mind, like till that time I'm going to have this player, even if he fails. And for Barnes, it's game week three, and for Rafinha also it's game week three, or maybe a little more for Rafinha, but that's what I have in mind. But again, if I had seen a player around that price range which really tempt me, then I would definitely, you know, just in a week,
but it's more the eye test that would drive that decision. So for example, if I saw Harvey Barnes getting 5 shots, 4 on target for the next 3 weeks, but he's still not scoring, I'd be tempted to still keep. But do the stats bother you at all? But at the same time, you're looking at the eye test. Shots could be rubbish, for example.
If you remember, same time last season, game week one, plenty of people went with Son and I think Kane. Everton won 1-0 game week one. And I know few people who actually sold Son after their loss to Everton, thinking that, okay, Jose Mourinho is not going to, you know, do anything with this team. And then the game week two, they put 5 past Southampton. And I think both Son and Kane got 20 pointers. So as much as I know that, okay, Barnes and Rafinha, maybe they didn't do well and Barnes didn't look particularly good, but when I chose them in my game week what team, it was, there was a reason for it. And so I don't think like this is a point where any other player is, you know, tempting me enough to, you know, sell Barnes for. And it might happen, like, you know, in next couple of game weeks, Rafinha and Barnes might catch up to Jota's and Greenwood, and it would all good. So yeah, definitely, I think just for one game week, I don't think it's a good strategy just to whatever you have thought in the preseason for 3 weeks, just to change plan based on one game week result. I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, I mean, I think that's a fitting place to end, because it draws on from what you were talking about at the beginning, about that sort of anchoring that view, even writing it down, and then you can go back and revisit that and just sort of assess, you know, the information that you've had. And I'll just put your career history back up again so people can see it. And it's those last 4 or 5 seasons, but definitely the last 2 or 3, where social media and the proliferation of content has been so great. I think the attitude that you've got is very wise there too, because it sort of grounds the opinion and doesn't get it bogged down with all the noise that's going. You can sort of cherry pick the noise and see if that fits in and is better or worse than the idea that you originally had. So I think that's quite good. And just before we go, is there anything else you wanted to add at all?
No, I mean, just one thing, that just enjoy the game. As I said, like I play this game for, you know, take odd risk here and there, and if it works out, there's no joy like that. So if you find fun in playing this game certain way, don't hesitate, just go for it. Overall ranks and stuff, maybe nobody would care about it, you know, a few years down the line. So just have fun.
Great stuff. Well, that's a fitting message. Shiva, thanks so much for coming on Meet the Manager. You've been a great guest. It's been fascinating hearing about the growth of the game around the world, but also your strategies for success. Good luck, everyone listening and watching. And Shiva, good luck with your game week and another good season, let's hope.
Thank you very much. Same to you. And thanks for having me.